Blackstar of Blackstar Productions. Say hello, Blackstar.
Hello, Blackstar.
And we're in the studio of Blackstar Productions. This is the second part of a two-part podcast on level 5 of Halo 3, Floodgate.
And what a level it is.
Another thing that we get in this now, all big topic of discussion for the Halo 3 in general, and some of these early levels in specific, is the Cortana moments.
Oh, yes.
Where the gameplay is interrupted. Again, it's not quite a cutscene. You don't lose full camera control. You can actually keep moving. Bungie tried to design it so that through this moments when your field of vision changes and there's a color filter put over the screen and there's some dialogue from a character, up until this level, it's always been Cortana. But in the end of this level, it's not Cortana, it's Gravemind.
No, it's Gravemind.
And instead of the blue filter, we get a green one.
With some zoom and a jiggle.
And with zoom and jiggle. And again, no combat in that area. You're not in any danger in that area. But
no, they timed them well.
How did you feel about the Gravemind moments?
Strangely enough, I found the Gravemind moments and dialogue far less jarring and interruptive as much as I did the Cortana moments, which is weird. And one thing that kind of got me about the Cortana moments was the imagery that they used, or I don't know if the particular video effect or whatnot, it seemed interlaced and kind of jarring, which means it seemed to have striations and lines, almost as if there was a mistake or an error. And I think they were trying to give you the impression that, you know, yeah, this video is jarring and messed up and not correct and whatnot. But it almost looked as if the effect itself there was a problem with, and it didn't quite come off as very effective to me. And also how the controller behaves and the overall look of it. For whatever reason, the Cortana moments I always found as much more annoying and more disruptive to the game flow, and I no longer felt immersed. I no longer felt part of it. I felt like Bungie was pulling me back from this and saying, "Oh, wait a minute, we got some important dialogue moments here. We got to show you. Stop."
So, what do you think they should have done about it? Should they?
Should
they have taken camera control completely and made this a cutscene? Or should they have just removed them?
To be honest, and this is just me personally, I would have enjoyed more if they had added one extra cutscene and had elements of all the different, you know, moments that they had throughout the game, and put that together in a more effective single cutscene someplace in the game of where it would have been most useful. Then how they implemented it now and kept the Gravemind moments on the levels where you encounter him on all the different flood moments that he decides to interject, because those I didn't felt were jarring. The dialogue felt meaningful and apropos to the moment, and for him to have that special ability, if you will, him trying or his ability to talk to you in that way, and how the whole environment, they just kind of zoom you out of it slightly in third person and really kind of shake you around. You get the feeling that this character is oppressing you, is trying to stop you, is slowing you down to make you think about what you're doing and how he's going to try to stop you. First, he tries to recruit you. Then he starts to threaten you. Then he tells you all the things that are going to happen if you continue. So he's trying to persuade you in his own particular way.
Which actually meshes nicely with what they started in Halo 2. In Halo 2, it's not really apparent at all
that he's evil.
That Gravemind is a bad guy.
No.
He tells you the truths that nobody else wants to face up to, especially for the Arbiter.
Yes.
Where his entire society is based on this false belief.
His whole religion collapses.
And what the great journey is going to be.
Yes.
And Gravemind dispels that for him, and that leads to the schism within the Covenant. I have to say, it was never, again, going back to this question of what was going to happen when the Flood get to Earth or Flood get to the Ark. What could the Chief do? What would your ultimate objective be? You spent 2 games stopping a Halo installation from being fired, but there was always the question of what was going to be done with the Flood as a whole, not just this group here, that group there that you had to attack. What were we going to do about the question? And was there going to be any alternative but using the Halo installations, that at some point, instead of trying not to fire one, you would have to fire one. And I thought there was an opportunity there, maybe, given that we're not presented that Gravemind is necessarily all a bad guy in the second game, that perhaps some compromise was possible. I asked the question of what does Gravemind really want, and is it possible for anything that he wants to be given to him, or is firing the Halos preferable to anything that he might want?
Right. But yeah, as far as it relates to those particular moments, though, I felt for whatever reason, and you know, it's just me personally, I thought the Cortana moments were more pulling you out of it, and the Gravemind moments were pulling you into it.
Is that because we already know Cortana so well, and we know everything that she's going to say?
I don't know. I don't know whether it was a combination of the particular effect that they used that didn't really, you know, lend credence to me as far as what was going on. It didn't quite seem obvious to me whether he was supposed to be recalling this information or she was supposed to be communicating to him on some other level. And maybe there was the books. I'll have to go read them again. But it just didn't do it for me personally. And yet, strangely enough, both of them do almost the exact same thing. But Gravemind does it just different enough. I don't know whether it's the voice actor and the dialogue that they chose. I don't know whether it was simply the moments and where you were in the game. I don't know what it is.
But I have to admit that the Cortana moments never really bothered me. I know there are some people who said that after they'd seen them once, they really wanted to be able to skip them.
Yes, I wish that were possible after the first run through.
That never really bothered me. In fact, but then again, when I play the game, I hardly ever skip cutscenes even after I've seen them because most of them I think are just so well done.
Especially now, they look great.
I prefer to watch them.
They look stunning. So, I mean, even the Halo 1 cutscenes, I mean, they're just so well orchestrated. Halo 2, not quite so much, yeah. But these ones I thought were beautifully, beautifully done.
I shall remain here. We'll let nothing pass.
But another thing that's different here is about Gravemind talking. Now, we only see Gravemind talking in Halo 2 in the scene where he actually appears. And we see this. We see Audrey 2. We see...
Yep. Feed me Seymour.
Feed me Seymour.
Yep.
They obviously thought better of that. Because Audrey doesn't come back in this game.
No. Well, we never know. There has been a sequel.
But what do we get instead? We get Gravemind talking as a disembodied voice in these moments.
Do not be afraid. I am peace. I am salvation.
At least he didn't break out into song.
How is that happening? With Cortana, you could almost believe that without them even explaining it, that there's some residual connection between the cybernetically enhanced chief and his artificial intelligence, even from across the galaxy, that there's some method through which he is speaking to him, something beyond technology, something almost spiritual.
I've got a great disturbance in the Force.
But here, Gravemind shows up in the form of these individual flood forms, and as the suicidal marine tells us here,
communicates
through
them.
They speak.
Yeah.
They talk now. Two games, and the flood forms were mute, and now they've learned. They've learned to speak. I guess 343 was right. Their simplicity belies their intelligence, and now they're talking. And Gravemind here in this first Gravemind moment says,
"I am a timeless curse. Join your voice with mine, and sing victory everlasting."
I can't help but wonder, though, when I hear him say that, victory over what? What exactly is it that Gravemind is fighting? Who is he fighting, and what is he fighting for? I'm not sure we ever really get an answer to that, except
the universe as a whole.
Except the idea that he's a hegemonizing swarm, and he wants everything to be what he is, and that's all.
We are dyslexic of Borg. Will be laminated.
It's the threat of international communism.
Well, you know, it could be that, you know, it could be the, you know, biologic against the technologic. It could be the, you know, the creation of this particular creature that simply wants to survive and is surviving too well.
You certainly get the biological versus technological if you look at the story that we see later in the terminals.
Yep, you don't know it at this point, but later on in the terminals, yeah, you do get a lot more information as far as the backstory goes. We'll have to cover that later. But, Yeah, no, it's as far as this level is concerned, it definitely gives a wonderful introduction. So those particular, you know, moments lead far more into the story, and as well as Gravemind as a character. So no, the first time I was running to it, I thought it was very, very well handled. The lighting, the mood, and how the effect worked. That you know, particular, you know, camera jiggle, and it gives a very gelatinous, very organic feel to it, just as all the environments with the flood have taken over
much,
are.
Yeah, much more so than I mean, we don't see the flood change their environment very much in Halo 1. We do start to see it in High Charity in Halo 2, and here we've seen the full transformation.
Well, there were moments in Halo 2 where you got to see a little of it. It was very much heavy and, you know,
it's also
dark.
Very dark.
It was very, very dark, so you don't see a lot of it. Here's the first one where you see it in full
this
blight.
Level and in Cortana later, there is a huge transformation, and although the environment is dark and foggy sometimes, it's never so dark that you can't see it.
Right.
Which I think is good. Now, whether that's just because they've gone to high def now, or
maybe,
or what, I'm not really sure.
Well, it could be the light mapping, or basically, you know, how the environment is played out, and they want it to be more true and more realistic to where they are, because now they've got holes in the ceiling where the sun can come in. They've got, you know, big gaping environments that are open to the outside world. So obviously, there are, you know, much more available light sources for them to take advantage of, and having the technology, I'm sure, to you know, render the lighting a lot better with a lot more advancements and opportunities for different effects. They wanted to take advantage of it, and here, you know, the walls are very slick and, you know, gel-like, and, you know, and glossy in certain areas, and a lot of things, you know, move subtly in the background. You see all this very alive feel to it, so the lighting definitely helps with that.
Chief
Cortana.
High Charity, the Prophet's holy city, is on
Cortana.
Reclaimer. Before your construct suffers any further
Wait.
Trauma.
Leave her alone.
All right, so as this level comes to an end and the chief rescues Cortana, we see the beginning of what is probably, in terms of story material, one of the densest cutscenes in the game. We've really been led along by without much information up until this point. In Sierra 117, the cutscene is primarily there to set up your presence and the presence of the Arbiter. And later, we get involved in the Marine conflict, and we see that Truth is up to, digging up this artifact. But the big story really doesn't advance much until we get to this scene here.
And we get, who do we get back?
Well,
Guilty Spark.
That's true, Guilty Spark is back.
Do not take this device to a safe location. Somewhere I can make repairs.
On Halo, you tried to kill Cortana. You tried to kill me.
Protocol dictated my response. She had the activation index, and you were going to destroy my installation. You did destroy my installation. Now I have only one function: to help you, Reclaimer. As I always should have done.
He's back with a vengeance, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, that's right. Don't shake the light bulb. Yeah, he definitely gets a chance to kind of redeem himself in the eyes of a lot of the players, I think. He definitely is reviled by a lot. Personally, he's always been one of my favorite characters.
Oh, me too.
And he's always one to certainly progress the story, and has so much information that you always want to get little snippets of what he knows and what he's learned, that he was always one of the, you know, most interesting characters to me. A lot of people, they get on the voice and they're more interested in the gameplay and the shooting and whatnot. But for me, it was always, you know, a very, very interesting character. And in this particular scene where you finally retrieve the data message module that has the Cortana information on it,
not Cortana herself.
No, a message that she left. This is the main midpoint of the game, I think. This is where everything turns. This is where you finally find out about what everything you have to do after this point, and how the game is going to progress, because now things have changed. The portal is open, the Covenant and the Flood are going through, and you have to follow, because Cortana is got to be recovered.
Well, that's the argument that we're about to witness in this cutscene here. I just want to point out, though, because it is so dense, not only in the verbal sections, but all those, so the nonverbal sections, is that the scene here where presumably you are now aboard a Phantom, which is going to head up to the Shadow of Intent, where you'll meet with Lord Hood and the Spec Ops Commander and Commander Keyes and 343 Guilty Spark. There's just a scene of a few seconds. It was actually featured in some of the promotional material for the game, where you see Covenant cruisers firing beams into the fog below there. And that's the cruisers glassing
the Flood.
The Flood. And it's really not clear because people always want to wonder, well, what about the Flood there? Is this really all the Flood? You know, more will come later from High Charity, as Cortana warns, but you only get to see it for a few seconds, and it's not really clear what you're looking at. We've never actually seen it. We've read about glassing in the books. We've never seen it in the game up until now.
Yep, and I think it was probably assumed it was more of a bombarding type attack rather than actual energy weapons.
Yeah, you only see it for
weapons.
A few seconds.
I think they do cover some of it in the books. So I'm sure there's probably some, you know, story or technical detail that has been, you know, specified. But yeah, this is the first time where we actually get a chance to see it in action. And I believe in some of the ads, you're not exactly sure who is it doing it, because there are Covenant forces that have same types of ships. You don't know who's down below.
I had always presumed that these were
enemy
ships in the promotional material.
Right.
And here it's realized that, no, these are the elites. These are the elites here come to save you.
And because in Halo 2, there was an underlining theme where supposedly Earth was being, you know, glassed and destroyed, where you see these big, you know, almost atomic-like explosions.
Which apparently wasn't happening.
No.
Earth was being attacked, glassed.
Correct.
Until now.
Correct. It was changed. So the question is, you know, oh, did Bungie decide to bring that back? Oh, were they going to try something a little bit different with this? So, yeah, so there is that element where you're not sure. But here you finally get a chance to see what's really going on. And the Covenant forces, which are here, are not only allies or supposed allies, they're also ridding your planet of the Flood. Mm-hmm. They're saving you. So that's a big, big moment, especially when, you know, you get a chance to see the entire collection of both human and Covenant forces and Guilty Spark, which was the big enemy from the first one,
together. This is the level where the personal alliance of convenience that was forged between the Chief and the Arbiter in Halo 2, which was done at the instruction of Gravemind, forms a more general alliance between humanity and the elites as a breakaway faction from the rest of the Covenant. And it also solidifies what the sides are actually going to be, because people kept wondering, well, how are they going to divide the forces? In Halo 2, when you're fighting on that side, it's not just the elites. It breaks down. There are some grunts who are on your side. There are hunters that are on your side. And the other side is brutes and jackals. Here, it's just elites. Everybody else is on the other side, and you don't get help from the elites that often. One scene you can also see here, right after the glassing scene, is that you get to see that the portal is, in fact, still open. They obviously want to emphasize that fact.
Well, it's been open this whole time.
Obviously,
you know,
a bad security design for a system that was supposed to keep the Flood and anyone unauthorized from going through this thing and reaching an installation as sensitive as the Ark, and it's still open, and apparently anybody can fly through it, and they do.
Well, the question that you never quite really get is, how did the Covenant forces, being the brutes and the grunts and the jackals and et cetera, were able to not only find it, uncover it, access it, but also turn it on and use it correctly? So there's a whole lot of questions there, which are completely,
unvisual. It is a good question. If a Halo installation requires a Forerunner,
how'd they do
it? To activate it, a human, a reclaimer to activate it.
How'd they
Why is this? I mean, is there, again, maybe a subplot there? I mean, they keep trying to capture humans and force them to be used this way.
Yes, you see that later in the game.
Maybe that's happened here too, just we haven't seen it.
Exactly. It's totally up to the imagination as far as the game's concerned. They don't show you any other elements to it. And as you see it play out, they do go through, and you have to go through. So maybe not only could they, you know, not turn it on, but they couldn't turn it off. So, you know, there's a whole aspect to it, especially with the security of the universe at stake going on, that there was a question of why that actually happened.
Okay. This scene, for my money, one of the most beautiful in the game, really. It's the control room of the Shadow of Intent. We get to see Halfjaw here in his floating command chair, and most of the cast of the game is here. The Arbiter, the Master Chief, 343 Guilty Spark, Lord Hood, Commander Keyes, and of course the first appearance of Cortana in the form of this Princess Leia hologram recording.
You're my only hope.
Obi-Wan, you're my only hope. Master Chief, you're my only hope.
Will it live, Oracle? Can it be saved?
Uncertain. This storage device has suffered considerable trauma. Its matrices are highly unstable.
Perhaps one of our technicians.
That will not be necessary.
Chief!
Success!
Hi, Charity. The Prophet's holy city is on its way to Earth with an army of Flood. I can't tell you everything. It's not safe. The Gravemind, it knows I'm in the system.
It's just a message.
Let it play.
But it doesn't know about the portal, where it leads. On the other side, there's a solution, a way to stop the Flood, without firing the remaining Halo rings. Oh! Hurry, Chief. The Ark. There isn't much time.
I'm sorry.
No matter, Oracle. We've heard enough.
But Half-Jaw really is a badass, and he gets to show it here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has a lovely piece of dialogue here that really gives that fear of the Covenant and the elites as a whole, again, as a species.
Our fight is through the portal, with the brutes and the bastard truth.
Fine. We'll remain here. Hold out as long as we can.
Did you not hear? Your world is doomed. A Flood army. A brave one has you in its sights. You barely survived a small contamination.
And you, Shipmaster, just glassed half a continent. Maybe the Flood isn't all I should be worried about.
One single Flood spore can destroy a species. Were it not for the Arbiter's Council, I would have glassed your entire planet.
Yeah, the stuttering little moment here with Cortana, though, is kind of interesting. Because you get a chance to see her, and yet you know that's not her. She's, you know, obviously has this very serious desperation in her voice, and yet she can't really be too specific because of the Gravemind.
Right. Okay.
She has this cataclysmic moment of collapsing.
Let's talk about this, though. I think it's been known that, or at least suspected, that Cortana is not always completely honest.
Yeah. Well, she's an infiltration program,
deception is part of the game. She says here that there is a solution to the problem of the Flood, that High Charity is coming to Earth, but that Gravemind doesn't know about the portal, doesn't know where it goes, and that beyond the portal, there is a solution to the problem of the Flood that does not require
activating the halos.
Mm-hmm. This is the first and last time we will ever hear about this idea of a way to fight the Flood
without using the halo.
Now, did she make that up?
It's an interesting perspective. The question is, she knows that Gravemind can either listen either partially or
it's my personal opinion that she tricks Gravemind into taking High Charity through the portal. She probably knows. She might even suspect at this point that Installation 04A is under construction.
You think so?
I'm not sure about that. Certainly, there's no.
She's been trapped in there for a very, very long time.
If High Charity lands on Earth and stays there, then there's no way to get rid of him without destroying the human race as well, because all the other human colonies are destroyed, as Hood says in this scene.
Yeah, all we have is Earth.
Earth is all that is left.
Sir, with respect, Cortana has a solution.
Cortana? Did you see her condition? How damaged she is?
She could be corrupted for all we know. Her solution could be a Flood trap.
We should go through the portal. Find out for sure.
What we should do, Commander, is understand clearly that this is humanity's final stand. Here, at Earth. We go, we risk everything. Every last man, woman, and child. If we stand our ground, we might just have a chance.
No. If your construct is wrong, then the Flood is already won.
I'll find Cortana's solution, and I'll bring it back.
Earth is all we have left. You trust Cortana that much?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, well, that's the first time you hear from it, so too.
It's expediency. That's a big moment here. If you want to allow the human race to be saved while the flood is eliminated, then they have to be separated. So at some way, you've got to get Gravemind to go away. You've got to offer him something that seems worth going somewhere else after bothering to go to Earth. Why is he following Earth? Well, presumably he's following Truth. He wants to stop Truth from setting off the installations. If all Cortana really wanted to do was to make sure the flood were destroyed, she could do nothing. She could allow Truth to do what he's trying to do, which is set off the rings. That would fire the system, and that would get rid of the flood, and the problem would be solved. Now, you'd set the galaxy back, and obviously no one's been doing any cataloging, any indexing this time around.
No.
So there's going to be no system in place to bring these species back if we assume that that's what the indexing process does.
And that's what the Ark was created for.
These beings in their civilization.
Yeah. And that's why the Ark was put far out of range of these things outside the
right.
actual galaxy.
But it's a huge risk if she's allowing the Flood to get to the Ark, where halos are built, where halos are controlled from.
And supposedly that's where the last bastion of humanity and all these species are.
Yeah, just to have a chance at getting rid of the Flood without having to sacrifice himself, which is the choice the Forerunners made. They sacrificed themselves to save the rest of the galaxy. And here, it turns out humanity is not quite so selfless as that.
Nope, apparently
and,
not.
Certainly our artificial intelligences aren't.
No.
This is either the best decision you've ever made or the worst. Hell of it is, Chief. I doubt I'll live long enough to find out which.
And again, it strikes me that this cutscene, this exchange between Half-Jaw and Lord Hood exists primarily to justify what is constantly the case in these games, which is that you have to be outnumbered.
Yes.
They can give you allies, but you have to be outnumbered. You have to be facing insuperable odds. So here, the bulk of the human forces, led by Hood, decide to remain on Earth. Commander Keyes is going to go on with the Arbiter and the Chief through the portal to follow Cortana's advice to try and see if there's a way to defeat the Flood without using the Halo installations. But Hood isn't coming, so you'll have some Marines, and that explains the small scale of the engagements, generally speaking.
Considering the amount of forces that are being sent through. But what's interesting here is that the Lord Hood almost, completely leaves it up to the Master Chief. He doesn't order him to go. He doesn't order him not to go. I mean, he could have completely said, you know, nope, we're not doing that. I need you here, Chief, because we got to protect Earth, because Earth is the only last bastion of humanity left. He says that all the colony is gone.
For a non-commissioned officer, he seems to have a high degree of initiative.
Yeah, I'm quite amazed at that, because I'm sure there's a lot of military personnel that play this game that said, no, that would never happen. So the military force hierarchy and how it behaves is a little interesting, and it's definitely, you know, a video game world, so I'm sure there was some licenses that they were able to take on certain aspects. But yeah, the whole idea and the concept that, of course, you know, the Master Chief is now we're on another rescue mission. We've got to save Cortana because she's the only one that knows or has this idea of how to defeat the Flood. And when you actually, you know, of course, find out later in the game what she actually
right.
does
but
have,
they'll conveniently
it's a little
forget
different.
About that for the next few levels.
Yes, of course. But yeah, no, it's an interesting moment, and it is the major midpoint of the game. It's where, you know, it sets everything up that follows thereafter. And here, for the first time, you really get a chance to see the interaction between the humans and the elite.
Some nice scenes here. You see some phantoms. They've already started painting the phantoms green.
Yeah, so I thought that was a nice touch.
So that you can tell them.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I just want to point out, because the last scene and this one share something in common, which is that generally throughout the series, the Halo games have had exceptional audio design and exceptional scores.
Yes.
Mad props for Marty. There have been a couple of points,
and his
though,
staff. Don't
where,
forget the staff.
That's true. Jay and the other guys.
Jay always gets forgotten. Poor Jay.
And
he always gets forgotten.
No, Jay doesn't get forgotten. The one that gets frightened is Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Is everyone...
Michael
Salvatore. Yes, everybody leaves out Mike because...
I know.
Because Marty,
he's second.
Because Marty likes the spotlight.
Well,
what do you want to say?
Well, does he? He's a Republican.
But I always thought there were two points in the series where the audio didn't quite get across what was going on in the screen. And it actually, it's funny because it's two scenes that are very similar.
Yeah.
It's Halo 2, the beginning of Quarantine Zone, when the Spec Ops commander is giving a little rah-rah pump-up speech about going to fight the Flood, and the elites are supposed to give this roar. And it doesn't sound like a bunch of big, bulky elites roaring. It sounds like a couple of frat boys in a phone booth.
Yeah.
And
outside a hockey match.
It doesn't... The audio, it's one of the only areas where the audio doesn't quite live up to the grandeur to what you're seeing on the screen. It is not a particularly large group, but they really seem half-hearted. And we see the same kind of thing here. We're on the bridge of the ship when the Spec Ops commander is talking about going through the portal to chase Truth. They also give a roar there, and it really sounds less enthusiastic. In most areas, visuals are trying to catch up with the great audio, and most of the time they do it. But here's an area where it's kind of the other way around.
Well, as you can see from the bridge, I mean, there's not a whole lot of elites there, so you're not going to get, you know, that Doom type moment where you have this entire panoply of
crowd. But there's also not a lot of upholstery. I mean, what is it that's absorbing the sound here? And these guys have big barrel chests. You know, they ought to be pretty deep voices. You look at the Arbiter and you look at the Spec Ops Commander; they have really deep voices.
Well, we don't know what a lot of these materials are.
These guys sound like pussycats.
The thing that I think you mentioned before we started this was this particular scene where you actually see the assembly of weapons, where you see Johnson pulling together materials, where you see the Arbiter pulling together materials for their mission, and you get a chance to see the background where you see the elites on one side and the Marines on the other. You know, you can that Half-Jaw's speech gives you the sense, you know, this is a very, very, you know, tentative alliance here. You know, there's certainly not some, large timeline to go on where these people have been friends for a while. They're barely allies. It's kind of an interesting moment. You see little Sergeant Johnson, of which you've always kind of looked up to for a long time, handing around these all 7 and 8 foot tall elites. He looks very, very small. He looks like the water boy that you see, handling all the football players.
I always thought this red
drinks.
Elite, this red elite is leaning on it's like a James Dean character, right? He's sitting on the front of his ghost.
He's
and
chilling.
Johnson walks by and he gets up almost like he's, offering a little old lady his seat on the bus.
Yeah, kind of.
But you notice the parallels here. You have this group of elites, and into this group of elites walks Johnson, who's carrying Covenant carbines.
Yeah, and sniper rifle. He picks it up.
Right,
he's like, oh,
and,
that's
and
mine.
He,
thank
right,
you.
He picks up the Covenant sniper rifle. And then what do we cut to from there is the Arbiter coming through.
He's
and
picking
what's
up
he
a
carrying?
Rocket launcher.
Exactly. So they make this very deliberate attempt to mix the forces and the weapons here, where the human is carrying the Covenant weapons and the Arbiter is
carrying
the human weapons.
He's got a flamethrower there too.
Yep.
Everyone's like, hey, light bulb. So they're all floating around and bringing everything together. But yeah, you see the look on that red elite's face. He looks like he's ready to tear off Johnson's head for taking that sniper rifle.
Well, it's
hard
to tell. You can't really see their faces. And of course, the flight suit elites there have got these masks on. You can't see anything at all. But again, to talk about the audio, this is one of the few Halo cutscenes that's supposed to take place within a very, very large enclosed space.
You wanted that echoey, epic sound.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like it. The music is in the forefront here. There's very little ambient noise.
And yet it's an epic
really wanted
scene.
some hangar sound, something, some banging, some echoing, something that make this place really sound big. And maybe it was just one last bit of touch-up work that they didn't have time to do. Although the game did come out a couple months earlier than usual.
I blame KP and Shishka. I blame them.
You blame Shishka? All right.
Everybody blames Shishka.
We'll stick with that.
Yeah. And as the scene ends, we finally get a chance to see the Covenant forces with the Master Chief aboard and Captain Keyes.
Heading through the portal. And
heading through the portal.
Keyes goes off alone in a Pelican, which really kind of...
You mean Hood.
Really misrepresents what's going on there, because the bulk of the Covenant forces are going and the Chief is going with them, but the bulk of the human forces, what's left of them, are staying.
Yep.
And they're staying with Hood, but of course it's only because Hood has been on the Shadow of Intent, it's only one Pelican coming back, presumably just with him aboard.
Hmm.
All right, so that's Floodgate, and given that this is the Anger, Sadness, and Envy podcast, every issue we try to come up with something that angered us, something that saddened us, and something that we envy. My anger, really, for for this level is the ranged flood. Now, rocket flood were annoying enough. The games never gave us sniper flood, thank God. But we do get this ranged flood, which if you're playing on Legendary and you're coming up on the last room just outside the crashed cruiser, there are these ranged flood that call up high up on the towers and can really be a pain to take out. Yeah, you often don't have the proper weaponry for that. And I think that was probably the most, at least up until this point, the most frustrating encounter in the game to try and play. Was there something that made you angry, something about this level?
I would definitely agree with that. And if I had to have a number one pick, that would probably be it. The only other thing that really made me angry that I can recall, other than, you know, and of course this all varies with difficulty, was, you know, the sporadic range of ammunition available. Generally the AI with the flood, for the most part, I definitely just got the sense that once they saw you, they ran at you and that was it. They didn't really have a lot of, coordinated tactical stuff. There weren't a lot of environments where they came up behind you as well as the side of you or in the front of you.
Not until you get to the pure forms.
No, exactly. I mean, that's a very small section of this game. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, the whole level, I mean, you can play through in 20 minutes, and yet, you know, that particular section is, what, two? So for the bulk of it, the primary, you know, walking around through a lot of human environments, you never really had that kind of foreboding with them, so it was more frustration than anger, really. Other than that, I mean, there wasn't anything a lot about this level, this particular one, because this is kind of a precursor to other, flood-filled levels. Those ones I got plenty of anger for. But this one right now there wasn't a lot. But if I had to pick one, yeah, I would have to agree with your range flood, because there were many times having a battle rifle and it was the only long range weapon you had was completely
just takes too many rounds,
completely and utterly ineffective. Or worse, you run through every clip you have to kill one particular person, and yet there are many times, especially the higher levels, where they're in horrible, horrible positions above you, and of course that repeats at other levels as well.
Yeah.
And you have to take them out; you don't have a choice. So yeah, so that was probably the only thing that really, really angered me, I guess.
Okay, so sadness. I talked before about being in an emotionally uplifting moment when Halfjaw comes back into the game. The elites come in to save your bacon here, and actually, I was felt disappointed because. It's not too far from that moment to the end of the level. They do pull a little trick on you. You go into this cruiser, and there's actually nothing to fight down there. There's just a button you press to end the level.
Yep.
You see some Spec Ops corpses on the ground, uninfected Spec Ops corpses. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
why
you mentioned
that. They don't taste good to the flood, I guess. I don't know why we don't see any infected corpses there.
Yeah, was that a mistake or was that intentional? You gotta wonder.
I'm not really sure what was supposed to be suggested there. Why the flood would, they're obviously dead. Why the flood would choose to kill them and then not infect them, I don't really know.
Yeah, you don't know the circumstances of how they're doing, so.
But what I would say I was sad is that when Halfjaw came into the game, I was really expecting that we would see him in combat. I was really expecting that he would be alongside. Now, of course, he's taken on a new role where the Arbiter is with you. He's kind of become the leader of the elite forces as a whole. And as such, is probably too valuable to risk in single combat.
Yeah.
But it still was a little saddening that he wasn't there out on the field with you, even for just a few moments.
Yeah, I can definitely get the sense you definitely feel a lot of affinity for this particular character, and that seeing him in action in Halo 2 for, you know, a good stint of a few levels, and repeatedly in several levels, you know, you see him at the end to meet up with the Arbiter at the end of the game. You see him fighting the flood with the Arbiter when they go to station to recover the traitor. I mean, there's lots of different moments where he's a very active participant, and in this one it was very little. He was a cutscene character again, like you said. So yeah, I can see why that was sad.
Envy.
Envy. Let's see. As far as really wanting things in this, you know, it's more technical aspects of the actual game itself. You know, small interface things. You know, tweaking down jumping and things like that. But that's the game as a whole. As far as this particular level, I really would have liked to see certainly more information or interactivity with the portal itself. You know, at the end of the other level, you got a chance to see its activation, and this one, the flood suddenly, you know, crashed the party after you've spent the entire half, first beginning of the half of the game, you know, getting to the portal, finding out where the portal is, you know, stopping it from being activated or, you know, being involved with it somewhere. And then when you finally, the flood show up, you know, everything changes. The world goes sideways, and suddenly, you know, your objectives are changed. So it would have been nice, or I would have liked to have seen a little bit more interactivity with that, where now the flood is a presence. First you had to worry about the portal being activated. Now it would have been cool to worry about the flood actually controlling it, because the portal is the lead on to everything that goes on after. It's the lead to the Ark. It's the lead to everything that the Ark is involved with, and is the lead into all the forces getting to and from, including the you know, fast approaching High Charity, filled with Covenant. So excuse me, filled with Flood, on their way to interact with both the Covenant forces, both, you know, allied with you and non. So that seems to be a very, very deep, important, very, you know, crucial fulcrum in this whole game. And it seems like it was completely, you know, brushed over, either intentionally because of content or time or design or whatnot. But you really wanted more of that, more of you know, this being involved somewhere in the story, and you.
Okay, so instead of envying a feature from another game, you're envying elements of the same game, but
yeah,
elsewhere in other levels.
Pretty much, I guess so. I mean, as far as, you know, wishing that there was you know, other aspects from any other type of video game. I mean, I honestly don't play enough of you know, comparative ones to want, you know, smoke grenades in it, or, you know, one particular, or a gravity weapon.
Well, I don't think those
else
would work on Flood anyway.
I don't think they would either. So yeah, so I can't really say I have any features on that. But
well, I have a really simple one, and that's just, it goes back again to the ranged Flood. They joked about when Gears came out, somebody asked Frankie, is Halo going to add a cover system? And he said, Halo already has a cover system. It's called Getting Behind Something. And okay, that's a funny remark, and there's a certain amount of truth to that. But,
typical Frankie.
But on the other hand, there are things you can do in Gears that you can't do in Halo. You cannot fire from cover in Halo 3, and those ranged guys really make me wish, like, how, no matter how inaccurately, I wish I could fire from cover. And it's just because of the mechanic. You can't poke out just your head. To see, you cannot fire without exposing almost your entire body. There's no, it's not a tactical shooter. You can't go prone.
Right.
There's no glance button. You can't peek around a corner. You can't fire over your shoulder or over an obstruction. All those things that, it, you know, if it were real life or if it were a tactical shooter, you could do, you can't. And those ranged guys really make me wish that you could fire from cover the way you can in Gears.
I could see how in many combat situations that would definitely be an advantage, and I'm sure that many of the other game designers, for ones like Gears or other tactical shooters, like, you know, the Call of Duty series or things like that, or even, you know, first person, you know, PC type shooters that are a big popular, like all the Steam titles or Half-Life, or any of those. Yeah, they have certain aspects and they have certain advantages or disadvantages, but then you got to ask yourself, you know, how much of them can you change and have it still feel and be, you know, Halo. I don't know whether that would be a good thing or a bad thing, you know, being able to shoot around cover or, you know, even spray and praying or whatnot. I'm trying to see how that would kind of incorporate into multiplayer or whatnot. But I definitely see from your perspective that in certain environments and there are certain, you know, targets that you have to take out, it is incredibly frustrating of not being able to simply hide behind, because in real life, hey, I can stick my head behind a door and I can stick the gun around and I can pop off rounds. And if one of them hits, great. If not, hey, no big deal. I'm not exposing myself. So yeah, I can understand why that would definitely want to be a feature that you'd like to have, especially in certain points of this particular game where you're being surrounded by those very long-ranging Flood characters, and have little or no effective, you know, chance of reciprocating in fire.
All right, well, I think that wraps it up for level 5 of Halo 3 Floodgate, and we'll be back at the next episode of Anger, Sadness, and Envy. We'll start with level 6, the Ark. next episode.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
No.
Well, it's they're not going to subscribe to another one.
Well, bat time must be really inaccurate. I wouldn't use that for anything.
No, of course not. Well, especially outside the country. You know, because bats vary from, you know.
We're going to have to edit the heck out of this.
Well, we're going to anyway. We're at 10:54 right now. Right. We started at 9:25.
See, an hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, that's why if we split it in two. Right.
Okay.
So thanks for joining us, and we'll hope to see you next time. Now I got to push buttons. And then I got to hit this one. And the other button. And this button. It's too... Oh, did I forgot to hit record?
What? That's not funny, man. That's really not funny.
Oh, I got him. Oh, that was awesome. We got to save that for next time. Oh, man.
Also noticed that I had no monitor because you never hit the playthrough button. So I had no monitor the whole time.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well, thanks for tuning in next time. We'll see if we can get him again. This is Black Star from Black Star Productions, and you've been listening to Narcogen from Rampancy.net. Have a good one.